Today, 1 billion people in the world are starving, and nobody gives a fuck. What caught your attention about what I just said? Was it that 1 billion people are starving, or was it that a vicar used a bad word? If it was the latter, maybe that tells us something about what we expect vicars to contribute to any debate we might have. Also, more unsettlingly, it might tell us what our ears attune to. We skate over that difficult statistic and just listen to the bad word. I think one of the reasons, if you're the person who heard the bad word and not the bad statistic, one of the reasons why that might happen is because of the media. The media, that powerful, unaccountable organization, if you can call it an organization, that dictates the terms of the conversations we have, that sets the agenda for our debates, that licenses what it's okay to think or okay to feel about all kinds of things. The media in which we all struggle to find a voice. It's an interesting one for me in my dual role, both as faith practitioner, as is evident from what I'm wearing. I'm curate in the gritty inner city parish of St. Paul's Knightsbridge, my dear, the parking. And I'm also a media practitioner. I'm not Godslot. I say that I have actually done, as the Archbishop pointed out, songs of praise, but that's a departure from my normal watering ground, which is mainstream media, insofar as you can say that there is a mainstream in media. Media, like everything else, fragments and breaks up. What that means is the odd guest appearance on Have I Got News For You, which was the most terrifying experience of my life until this afternoon. Be gentle with me. Everything from that to songs of praise. And I think I am in a group of three of people who have appeared on both Have I Got News For You and Songs of Praise, the other ones being William Hague, leader of the Conservative Party one time, and Miss Charlotte Church. Good company to be in. The reason why I have access to the media is not because I think I have anything particularly different or original in terms of the content of what I say. It's because, in a rather unusual story, I started out not... Well, I did start out in the church. Like many of you, I sang in a choir when I was at school, so that's the background. But as soon as I was capable of thinking, I thought independently, I rejected any content of that, enjoyed the music, enjoyed being in the chapel, didn't believe any of it at all. But what that prepared me for was life as a professional musician. So 25 years ago, I was in a successful pop band. You may need to check with your mums, or perhaps even humiliatingly, your nans, to get a sense of what it was. It was a band called The Communards, and we had our 15 minutes of fame, and we did quite well in the middle 80s. And then I stopped doing that and started working professionally, mostly for the BBC as a broadcaster. Being in a pop band and then working for the BBC were, I realise now, complicated strategies for avoiding getting ordained in the Church of England. But eventually such strategies failed, and I found my way towards ordination. I thought that would be giving up broadcasting and media, and so with a rather pleased with myself cry, I left that yellow brick road and turned towards the harder, narrower path of ordained ministry, little knowing it would lead me back to London and also back into the media, where it's a truism often observed that nothing makes you valuable to the BBC more than leaving it. It's certainly true. And when I came back to London, I found all of a sudden people were interested in employing me again, only this time, rather bizarrely, I was wearing a dog collar and had a different kind of role, different kind of job, which has meant that I've become, without quite planning it, a sort of faith representative, but of a rather unusual kind. In having access to mainstream media. Most people you see in dog collars, most people you see as faith representatives working in media, do so in particular ways, called upon, like the Archbishop, to comment on matters of importance, national and international, church and in the wider society. You get people delivering a thought for the day over the boiled egg on Radio 4, whereas I rather unusually pop up on Saturday Live, being Fee Glover when she's off sick or on her holiday. I don't have a strategy about this, but I have a sense that the thing to do is to wear my dog collar when I appear on television, and to be announced as the Reverend Richard Coles when I appear on radio, the audio dog collar, if you like. And the reason I do that is because I think it's more and more important that people of faith have a voice, have a presence in the mainstream. In the old days, in the days when the BBC licence fee guaranteed monopoly of revenue, when there were charter requirements that made that everyone sitting around the television or the radio would participate in the same national conversation, the church's place, the place of faith, was guaranteed. That's no longer the case. And I think we're all immeasurably the poorer if we don't have the voice of faith, the voice of faith representatives, the spectacle, and in my case, emphasis spectacle, of faith representatives participating in the mainstream. What's a vicar doing in mainstream media? Well, contributing something, I think. In the first place, it's not... How am I doing for time? In the first place, it's... I think one of the things you can do is slightly subvert the genre. When I was in my last parish, I used to walk around in my dog collar, and there was a guy who used to come up to me every day, poke his face into my face and go, "Vicar of Dibley!" He did it day after day after day, which perhaps tells you something about what people's expectations are of dog collars. I think what I think I might like to try to do is to slightly subvert people's expectations about what people in dog collars can and can't do, what they can say and what they can't say. And also, I have that access. I'm lucky. I have that access because of my past, because of my CV. I can get into the mainstream in a way that other people can't. Why would I want to be there? Because I think people of faith have something of vital importance to contribute. Vital importance to contribute. Put on the television, check the schedules, listen to the radio. I picked up Metro this morning on the tube in the way in, and it was mostly preoccupied, first of all, with someone spending 65 million quid on the Giacometti sculpture at Sotheby's, but mostly it was concerned with Peter Andre breaking down in tears, discussing his breakup with Jordan on Sky Television. I think if we're going to have a national debate, if we're going to have a national conversation of the kind we used to have, of the kind we need to have, then we need to broaden that debate, broaden it. Really, I think, in a sense, in my last parish, I say I'm at St. Paul's Knightsbridge now, one of the poorest, richest parishes in England, if not the world. My last parish was Boston in Lincolnshire, one of the poorest parishes in England. And I learned something there about the value of being a visible presence. The church stood at the centre of that town, which was destroyed by heroin addiction. It had all the social problems you'd expect with a big urban centre. The one institution which was open and accessible and had any authority at all to people whose lives were unimaginably chaotic was the church, simply by being there, simply by having its door open, simply by witnessing to the circumstances, the predicaments, the suffering of the people who lived there, and, God willing, pointing to something beyond. I don't think you can overstate just how important that is, the visible presence of the church, of faith, at the centre of our public affairs. I'll just finish very quickly. I noticed recently you would have seen the publication of the Survey of British Social Attitudes. Most commentators, of course, picked up the issue over same-sex relationships, which in 2008 most people are very relaxed about, compared to 20, 25 years ago when most people were not very relaxed about that. And there was a lot of comment about that, typical hoo-ha, just what you'd think the media would host. There's a more important statistic that was published too that I think got largely ignored. In 2002, 63% of people thought taxes should be raised to increase funding for health, education, and social services. In 2008, that figure had shrunk to 39%. The poor, the hungry, the homeless, the needy, the neglected, the addicted, and nobody gives a fuck.